We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
It's 12:37. You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Jeff Bossert. A weak cold front pushing across the state tonight brought widely scattered light showers to portions of central and southeast Illinois early this morning. However, rainfall totals amounted to no more than a few hundredths of an inch. Skies turned mostly clear behind the front, with temperatures ranging from the low 60s to the north to the low 70s across southern reaches of the state. Cold front will continue pushing eastward today and should exit the state this afternoon. That passage of the front will give way to breezy and cooler conditions across the region. The quiet weather and unseasonably and cool temperatures is expected to continue through the upcoming weekend. High temperatures today will range from the mid-60s in northeast Iowa to the upper 70s across western Kentucky. Low temperatures tonight will fall into the upper 40s in northern Illinois to the upper 50s across southernmost reaches of the state. The forecast for the rest of today around Champaign-Urbana becoming mostly sunny this afternoon with a high of 75 degrees, west winds up to 15 miles an hour. We're at 74 currently on Fronts Plaza. Partly cloudy skies tonight, the low around 48 degrees. Mostly sunny skies tomorrow with a high of 68. Mostly cloudy skies tomorrow night with a low of 45. Partly sunny skies Friday with a high of 65. Friday night and Saturday, mostly cloudy skies, the low 45, the high 65. For Saturday evening, partly cloudy skies, the low 45. Sunday and Sunday night, mostly cloudy, with a high of 65, the low 48. Partly sunny skies Monday, with a high of 72 degrees. Monday night and Tuesday, partly cloudy skies, the low 52 degrees, with a high of 72. Currently at Willard Airport, we have 72 degrees, 68 in Bloomington. It's 72 in Danville, 70 in Decatur, 73 in Effingham, 71 in Mattoon, and 73 in Rantoul. And once again on Friends Plaza, 74 degrees, the barometer at 30 inches and rising. It's 12:40. Chicago architect Gene Gang is known for challenging the aesthetics and technical limits of ordinary building materials. Gang led the team that designed Aqua, the residential skyscraper in downtown Chicago that's known for the sculptural quality of its facade. Gang, a 1986 University of Illinois graduate, was named a 2011 MacArthur Fellow. The honor includes a $500,000 no-strings-attached cash prize. Illinois Public Radio's Allison Cuddy spoke with Gang about her vision for Chicago, which goes beyond designing buildings, as well as her response to receiving a so-called genius grant.
A lot of people think of architects as designing buildings, you know, building by building and commissions. But what we've been doing is a lot more research and experimental work that kind of feeds into it. It's the creative energy that feeds into our commissions and our projects. But that work is not often funded.
Yeah.
So this will really help us to. I feel like a great burst now, and it'll help us to push that work forward in new ways.
In some ways, your incubator just got a lot bigger.
Yes, got a lot of nourishment.
Yeah, I want to talk about your work and some of the issues you're looking in, because I think people will be surprised to know that though you've built this high-rise Aqua, which has won a lot of acclaim, you're very interested in issues low to the ground, thinking about foreclosures and what that means for our built landscape and water. You've been doing a lot of work on thinking about the Chicago River.
Yeah, exactly. I guess our work is both horizontal and and vertical at the same time. But I think we've always been really focused on ecology, and especially how ecologies intersect large cities. Cities are also important for ecology because they concentrate populations into smaller footprints. And so I see them as really just about sustainability just as much as landscapes and wild places. But for the Chicago River, we've been looking at how to increase. There's large swaths of industrial wasteland bordering the Chicago River mm-hmm. that's vacant and available, you know, and so we've been exploring ways that we could re-energize that land, participate in reducing the amount of wastewater that's dumped into the Chicago River, and also looking at ways to prevent invasive species entering into the Great Lakes. So last semester I taught a studio at Harvard where students were asked to think about what a barrier, a hydrological barrier in the Chicago River might be, and the potential in that, not just a barrier, but could also be a bridge. It could also inspire new development along the river. So we've been looking at these issues and how they're intertwined, not just a simple building, but many things that are interconnected.
Tell me a little bit more about how you envision making those sort of fallow or wasted spaces active again, creative, and producing something. I mean, I know you're working on a possible boathouses, right, for the Chicago River.
Yeah, there will be students from IIT will start exploring, you know, how to implement boathouses along the river. And at the same time, you know, more people are getting access to this water that is really not especially clean. So bringing attention to that waterway is going to be key in supporting, you know, cleaning the health of the Chicago River. So we're excited to get that started.
And there's a lot of federal interest in cleaning up the Chicago River. Mm-hmm. It seems to be becoming a priority for the new administration, for Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Have you had conversations with the city about what you'd like to see happening with the river or how you might participate?
I think all these things are, these threads are just now coming together. So I'm excited to see the city taking initiative and really working toward pulling those threads in. And they're all connected. They all have, they will have a great impact on the city economically and sustainability-wise as well. So there's huge potential there along the river and investing in that river as a place for people and activity.
Chicago architect and U of I alumna Jean Gang is one of 22 recipients of this year's MacArthur Genius Grants. She spoke with Allison Cuddy for Illinois Public Radio. Political groups owe the state of Illinois hundreds of thousands of dollars in overdue fines. All campaign committees must make public who gave them money and how they spent it. That's the law. And if they file these reports late, they can be fined. But as Sam Hudzik reports for Illinois Public Radio, a lot of times those fines just sit there unpaid.
The Illinois State Board of Elections posts on its website a list of overdue fines. Close to 200 political committees are there, ranging from the Putnam County Democratic Central Committee, which owes $25, to the Friends of William Birch, which owes more than $35,000. Birch is a former candidate for Chicago alderman. He knew he'd been fined, but did not know he owed the most in the state.
I'm shocked. I mean, when you told me that, I was just sitting here with my mouth wide open, like, I'm like the center of attention now. How about that?
not for what you wanted to be the center of attention.
Of course not. No. I don't want to be center of attention for outstanding fines or whatever.
After losing his election in 2007, Birch didn't know he had to keep filing reports with the election board. Birch says he didn't get reminders to file because they were sent to an old post office box.
It wasn't like, you know, I was trying to, you know, slack off or ignore the fact that those reports were due. It's just that, you know, I didn't know that we had to file reports if we weren't running.
Altogether, the list of overdue fines owed to the state by various political committees adds up to nearly $700,000, with the oldest one going back to 1999. Rupert Borgsmiller directs the State Board of Elections.
Basically, the fines are infractions, are assessments that we levy for failure to file reports in a timely fashion.
The reports, required by law, are intended to add transparency to the money in Illinois' political system. With some exceptions, voters get to know who is giving money to candidates. If those reports are filed late more than once, Borgsmiller says a political committee gets fined. And if the committee ignores that fine,
we then post it on the website as a committee that owes money to the state for failure to file a report or reports in a timely fashion.
Sort of like a public shaming.
Well, we publish it out there to let people know for those committees that do owe money.
Among those owing money is the 22nd Ward Independent Political Organization, a campaign fund controlled by Chicago Alderman Ricardo Munoz. It's racked up $17,500 in fines that were due this spring. Munoz's staff would not make him available for an interview, though in a statement, his advisor notes that the fund has essentially been inactive for the past few years. Quote, after being alerted to the fines by WBEZ, we plan to close this committee quickly and start conversations with the Board of Elections to resolve any and all outstanding fines. The advisor says, to his knowledge, neither Alderman Munoz nor his staff were aware of the fines before we called. But Rupert Borgsmiller claims the board sent four notices to the address listed for the committee.
A letter was sent out on March the 9th to the 22nd Ward Independent Organization, Ricardo Munoz at 2500 South St. Louis, second floor.
That's the same address Munoz put on a recent campaign filing. Munoz is running for Cook County Circuit Court Clerk in next year's election. If the 22nd Ward Organization were his primary campaign fund, local election officials could block him from getting on the ballot if he refused to pay the fines. But since the organization is technically a political action committee, the board cannot keep Munoz from running and has no way of forcing him to pay up or forcing any PAC to pay.
The whole thing comes down to the fact that this is an assessment not against an individual, it's against the political committee.
The law just does not give the election board any power to go after them. But some political committees still choose to close up shop when hit with a big fine. That's what happened with the PAC headed by Joanne Rock. She leads a trade group of printing companies, which until recently controlled Illinois Print PAC.
To play the game in Illinois, you kind of need a fair amount of money. And that PAC certainly didn't have it.
An address change and a mail room mix-up led to Rock not getting reminders to file financial reports with the election board. She was late, twice, adding up to a $10,000 fine. So Rock shut the political committee down after talking with election board staff. The overdue fine, though, stays listed on the board's website for 2 years.
Is that at all embarrassing? I mean, do you feel at all, deadbeat-ish about that?
Nope, not at all. My personal opinion on this is that the fine system is ludicrous. I can understand that they want to have filings on time, but what do these filings do? They're simply information returns. It's saying, here's a PAC that had $4,000 or $5,000 in it, and we contributed $500 to Senator Lawson's annual picnic. Wow. It's not that big a deal. So these fines being the size, it's ridiculous.
My name is Ricky Jones, president of Cook County Democratic Women.
Ricky Jones has an entirely different take on these penalties. Her group, Cook County Democratic Women, was fined $5,000 last fall because of a late campaign finance report. Jones says one of her members promised to turn in the report, but never did.
So what I've learned through all of this is to take it down there and file it myself.
But she still has that fine to deal with. And even though there's nothing in the law to force her to pay it, she's determined to.
The reason I want to pay it off is because we owe the money. And I want to be a credible organization. And how can you be a credible organization if you don't follow rules? And I can't say, oh, I want to support you for governor, and I want you to be honest, and then, owe money and say, oh, they can't do nothing about it, so I'm not going to pay. When we don't get our stuff in on time,